My name is Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater. First thing I think we need to do is thank Unity Intergroup for sponsoring this and putting this together. I mean, we couldn't be here without Unity, right? I had it on my talk that we were going to thank Gene and Amy and Diane and Vicky. That already got done. But I want to thank you guys again for the work that you've done, because this is phenomenal. This is absolutely incredible. So thank you for being here. So, Brooke, everybody. So, my fellow travelers on this path to recovery, said, my name is Mark and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm going to qualify here a little bit today. Some of you may have heard my story, maybe some others haven't. But here it goes, a little bit of a twist. I grew up on a farm in California. And yes, California has farms. It does. We had beef, we had cattle, and we had pigs and horses. So I did grow up on a farm in California. I am actually one of the lucky ones, and I can think of exactly when my compulsive overeating started. It started when I was 12 years old. And I ask, why do I know that? Because at 12 years old, the local grocer came to our house and to the farm. We hadn't butchered yet, so we had a lot of open freezer space. And the butcher had a pickup truck, the grocery guy had a pickup truck full of half gallons of ice cream. And he told my dad, take as much as you want and fill the freezers as much as you possibly can. And we filled them. I think it was 75 to 100 half gallons of ice cream. And then as he was leaving, he tells my dad, he says, by the way, it's only going to last for a month or two or a couple months. So you guys either give it away or see what you can do. So my dad turned to my brother and I and he said, have fun. No, nothing. You can have it whenever you want. You're going to tell a 12-year-old that they can have that whenever they want. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I can tell you how we made meals for every single one of those things. And we did. We did. I never really showed my weight or thought that I was a compulsive overeater at that point, because I was on a farm, I was always working, I didn't have to worry about it, and I was always what I thought in shape. I didn't really balloon up too much then because we were working hard, but I ate like I should have. And from there, at the age of 21, I became a police officer, and I will share that being a police officer at 21 was not the right thing to do. I was a little bit young for that, but I did. At the age of 21, I became a police officer. And you know what they say about cops and donuts? It's absolutely true, right? It is. We go for coffee and we go for donuts. The problem was that most of my partners went for one donut and one cup of coffee. I would go with all of my partners, go for a donut, go for a donut, go for a donut. Nobody knew that I was going to each other person. And then if that wasn't enough, I would go outside the district and meet some of the other officers that were with outside of my district and have coffee and donuts with them too. It was pretty sad. The other part that happened was we'd get to a restaurant, and if you notice when officers are in restaurants, they always got your back to the wall so you can't, you know, we got to see what you all are doing. I always sat with my back to the wall but kind of sideways so you couldn't see how fast I was eating. And I used the excuse that I ate as fast as I could because I might get called out. Well, it was as fast as I could so I could order another meal real quick if I didn't get called out. It was bad. I never worried about my weight as a police officer because we had to do mandatory physical training. We had tests that we had to take. We had to fall within a certain limit. If that didn't happen, I'd wear a rubber suit, I'd take diet pills, and I would exercise like crazy as much as I possibly could. And the best part was one of our partners, she was a runner, and she told us if we could catch her, she would go out with us. So that was really an incentive to go running. It didn't happen because nobody ever caught her. Can't say we didn't try. I got injured in the line of duty. I got hit by a car, and they retired me. My eating didn't stop, but now my physical exercise did. And it caught up to me at that point. My physical testing was no more, but I was testing myself to see how much I could eat. And boy, did I eat. I ballooned up. Then the problem is I became obsessed about my weight and what that was like. As my weight went up, so did my depression. It was this vicious circle. I got depressed because I was heavy. I was depressed and I ate. It just went round and around and around, and it never went away. Life became so out of balance, and I took everything to the extreme. It became such an unmanageable place for me, and especially those around me. I think about my family and my friends and all of that. Now, as a cop, I always said I didn't have too many friends, but I had family. And it was not a fun place to be. I didn't take care of myself. I had no self-esteem. I had no faith, no hope, and I sure the heck wasn't honest. I avoided going out in public. I didn't want to go out in public. I was huge. I used to be in shape. I used to be in great shape, but I didn't want people to see me the way I was anymore. I was closed off and isolated. Just stay the heck away from me. I didn't have boundaries, especially around food. I ate over my emotions, my fear, my feelings, and my guilt. There were many times that I wanted to end it all, and the thought had crossed my mind. I had the means to do it, right? I was an officer. But then I remembered there's a time when I'd be out on calls and having to respond to a call like that and what it did to the families. There's no way I wanted to go through that or put my kids through that. I had young kids, and I think that was the time, and I didn't do it. So what happened? 2009, in March of 2009, my wife comes home and she hands me a clipping out of the newspaper, and she says, "Here, you need to go to this." It was a local meeting in Eden Prairie. She cut it out of our local paper. She said, "Here, you need to go." Well, happy wife, happy life. I went. But I jumped in with both feet. I bought every book that they had, every piece of literature. And then I saw steps 4 and 5. And I got scared and I ran away. There was no way I was going to do that. I remember telling my sponsor, "You know what? It's taking too much time away from my family. I can't do this. It's too much. It's taking too much time away from my family. I'm a dad. I got to be with my family." Talk about not being honest. I wasn't honest about that at all. In truth, I was scared and I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to do it. Somebody else had told me I needed to be there. I wasn't ready. Fast forward 9 years and over 100 something pounds later, February 2018, I'm sitting in New York with my brother. My brother gave me permission to share. He's also in program, not ours, a liquid program. But he's in phenomenal shape, and he's just this great guy. We didn't have a real strong relationship at that point, but here I am sitting in a cafe in New York. Him and I are eating. He's got this healthy salad and crap at that time, and I had a plate of food. And I'm asking him, "What are you doing? Why is life so successful for you? How did you make such a great thing for yourself?" And he says, "I just did it. I did the steps. I worked the steps, and I did the program, and I take care of myself, and I do what needs to be done." And he says, "What the hell happened to you?" He said, "I know in 2009 or so, you talked to me about doing the steps. You must have ran away or done something different because you never did your amends to me. And you owe me amends." It happened. So he planted a seed, right? It was a seed. He said, when we were leaving that day, he says, "You know, program helps. Get back in a program if you can." Was I ready? I think the seed was planted. Because 2 weeks after that trip in New York, my wife of 24 years said, "I want a divorce. No questions asked. I want to be done." At that point, I thought life was over, and there was my rock bottom. I had so much fear. I wanted to forget everything and run, just get the heck away from it. Yet again, another thought of ending it all had occurred. This time, I actually had the gun in my mouth. And I've never shared that with anybody before, but it came to that degree where I got to that depth that I actually thought about it. My kids were grown. They were out of the house. I didn't have to worry about it. I wasn't thinking about kids at that point. But I thought about my brother, and I thought about what he said, and so I didn't. Fear had made me procrastinate. I put off the work the first time, but I wasn't going to put off the work this time. For me, fear was about the future, the unknown. It became bravery once I faced it, and joy once I got past it. No matter where I was in life at that time, I wasn't going to let the pain of my past cloud the glorious future that I could have and become. So I got back into the rooms. So from March of 2018 to September of 22, 4.5 years, I worked a program like my life depended on it, because it does, right? I went to meetings, I did service, and I used the tools. I stayed out of the food, no sugar, no flour. I weighed and measured, and I released over 75 pounds, and I really liked the person that I had become. I was really happy with what I'd done. What I realized is that I put the program, the principles, in my abstinence first. That was the most important thing. However, and there's a however, right? In January 22, I lost my sponsor. And I half-assed tried to get another one. And I say that because how hard did I really try? How hard was it? I didn't. I didn't try hard enough, near hard enough. So I tried to sponsor myself. Now let me tell you how that worked. It didn't. It was at this time that I quit putting in the emotional and spiritual part of the program, and I also quit putting in the effort. I thought I was abstinent. It was a white-knuckle, half-assed program. I stayed out of the food only until September 22. So in September 22, I lost my abstinence after 4.5 years. I wasn't practicing the principles in all my affairs. By September of 22, I had lost all honesty, hope, and faith. You know, we get to the step 12 and we think we're done. Oh, I'm graduated, I'm done. But if we really look at step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So what does it mean to practice these principles in all our affairs? How do I apply the principles to my daily life, my daily interactions, in relationships, in my job, in my finance, to program, especially to program? Principles, honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, self-discipline, love for others, perseverance, spiritual awakening, and service. As I share here tonight, I will dive deeper into the principles that sustain us on this journey. The principles I get to discuss are honesty, hope, and faith. For me, these are not mere concepts, but a guiding principles that direct my way forward and empower my transformation. I believe they are foundational principles in the recovery process. Tonight, I'm going to be referencing the Big Book, the OA and AA 12 and 12, and believe it or not, the AA Dictionary and the 12 and 12 Dictionary. I did not know that these even existed until somebody in program told me about them. And so I'm referencing those a little bit too. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. The principle for that is honesty. Honesty is the cornerstone essential for self-awareness, accountability, and growth. Honesty gives me the courage to confront my truths, both the triumphs and the tribulations. It requires me to peel back the layers of denial and self-deception, to acknowledge the depth of my struggles, because I struggled, and I still do. And it also lets me see the impact they have on my life and those in the lives around me. Because my struggles, if I'm not practicing the principles in all my affairs, it's going to be an impact on those around me as well. In facing my truth, I found that it opens the door to freedom and to healing. When I embrace honesty, I pave the way for a genuine connection and authentic growth. Genuine connection and authentic growth. According to the Big Book Dictionary, there are 56 entries or pages in the Big Book related to honesty, honestly, and honest. And in the 12 and 12, there are 21. So if we look at the Big Book when it talks about that, it says honesty, truthfulness, sincere, not to lie, steal or deceive, fair and truthful speech and conduct. That's just some of the ones that they have in there. And then they talk about clear, correct, right, real, true, honorable, sincere, frank, open, candid, will not lie, cheat or steal, truthful, direct, unreserved, sincere, straightforward, absent of pretense or deception, real, correct, true, genuine, upright in principle and action, good, respectable, right, fair, and true. God, if I could just have half of those, I'd strive for most of them, but I do. I want all of them. I want to be that as much as possible. So from the OA 12 and 12, it says, when we look with complete honesty at our lives, we see that where eating is concerned, we have acted in an extremely irrational and self-destructive manner. Can you relate to that? How many self-destructive manners? So I think about all the insane and self-destructive things I've done, and I'm going to share a little bit about those with you, tell you what that looked like for me. One of the most crazy things I did, I remember my wife used to make this granola mix for our kids and I, and she put all these fun things in it. And one of the granolas had these, Gene, I didn't ask, can we say food? Had these chocolate-covered raisins in a great big gallon jar, but it was always sealed, right? It was always sealed. So she would say, nobody touch it. She said it to me. I think she pretended like she was saying it to the whole family, but it was directed at me. I know that. So I wouldn't open the top. What I did was I turned it upside down and I cut half of the bottom off, open it up, take them out, and tape it back up. put it back into the pantry, you'd look at it, it's still sealed. Score, right? Until the day she went to go make the pantry mix, or went to the pantry to make the mix, and she picked it up and the tape didn't hold. Yeah, I heard about that. I ate before I would come home from work. I'd be at work and I'd eat before I would come home. My wife was a stay-at-home mom, and so we'd always have meals ready for the kids and I when we got home. But boy, I was so hungry. I was so glad I got to have a meal with my family. I'd had a meal before I even got home. I'd already had a meal. I would lie about what I ate. I remember when them little munchkins would come around trying to sell those little boxes of things that were such crack to all of us, right? Our neighborhood, we had one of those little girls that would come around and sell it. And my wife would buy 3 or 4 boxes and share them with the family. I had a coworker at work whose daughter also did it. I bought it by the case and I left them at work because then nobody in my family would know that I had them. But I would buy them by the case and nobody in my family knew it. Here's probably the one that I had to do amends for this one too, but I stole my kids' Halloween candy. What did that look like? So they'd go out and they'd go trick-or-treat and they'd come back with this big pillowcase full of candy. And I would say, you know, being an officer, we always had to worry about what was in the candy. So let me take it to work and I'm going to x-ray it for you to make sure that they're safe. I wasn't x-raying it. I was picking out the candy that I wanted. Like I couldn't go to the store and buy it, but I was taking their candy. And I think about when I lost my abstinence. Here's a crazy part. I was eating 12 donuts, complete apple pies, and gallons of ice cream at one time. You know, the craziness, once I lost my abstinence, that crazy just became extreme. And it sure fed into my cycle of a vicious cycle of dishonesty. In the big book, page 65, and how it works, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. I had to admit my personal powerless over food and the fact without help that I could not successfully manage my life. I wanted to be honest in all of my affairs. An honest evaluation of our lives is a real eye-opener. Was I really happy? Had my compulsive overeating affected the lives and area, my life and the lives of others? It did. It affected my family, my mental health, my relationships, and overall my well-being. I wasn't social, and you sure the heck didn't want to be around me because of my actions. I was grumpy, I was angry, I was mean, and I was just not a fun person to be around. I avoided my kids and a lot of their activities so that they would go do their activities so I could stay home and eat so nobody would see me eat. I gave up my dreams, my hopes, and I didn't take care of myself. I had to finally admit honestly that I was a compulsive overeater. I had to smash the idea that someday I would again be a normal eater. I am never going to be a normal eater. I had to smash that idea. One way to be honest is daily to admit that I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi, I'm Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater. Now, we say this in the rooms and we say it at meetings, right? What if you said it every day to your HP during morning prayer and meditation? What would that look like? So I want to do that, right? Whatever HP is for you, whether you're looking ahead or whatever that looks like, I want you to close your eyes for a second and say, whatever they are, God, HP, whatever that may be, my name is Mark and I'm a compulsive overeater. So now you guys get to do it on your own. What's that look? Say it out loud so we can hear you. All right. I am a compulsive eater. What would it feel like? How much more would it sink in if we said that to God or our HP every single day? What would that feel like? I know for me it's been phenomenal, and I do. So I'd ask you, how did it feel? Think about how that felt and what that would feel like if you did that every day with your HP. Was it awkward? Was it truthful? And did you feel heard? I know when I talk to my HP, I feel heard. And that's just so important. If I'm being honest, how honestly am I following my food plan? Does that 0.1 ounce really matter when I'm weighing my chicken? Well, it does if I'm honest, right? I have to be honest. How honestly am I using the tools? And speaking of tools, a little self-promotion, there's a raffle prize back there directed to nothing but the tools. And if y'all need to figure out what some of the tools mean, I'll let you try to, we'll talk about that later. But it's kind of a fun thing to look at the tools in the toolbox and see why I would have chose that tool to put in there. So that's just something there. How honest was I on my fifth step? That's a biggie. How honest was I on my fifth step? When I finally did the first one in 2018, I thought I was honest. And I remember the person listening to me says, really? Is that all? You sure there's not something you left out? I did. There was more. But the more thorough that I did the fifth step, the better my recovery came. So I had to be as honest as I possibly could in my fifth step. Am I being honest with those in my life, even if it causes pain? I remember when I went home once, my family still lives in California. I went home, my mom tried to cook this incredible meal that she knew that I loved as a kid. Oh, you gotta have it. I didn't want to hurt her feelings, right? Because you don't want to hurt people's feelings, because that's the way we are, right? We don't hurt people's feelings. And I was lucky, my brother was there at the time, and he said, Mom, you don't force alcohol on me. Why are you forcing Mark's alcoholic food on him? I probably could have told her, but not quite as elegant as that, or as much of it made an impact for her, right? I have to be honest. And I have to be honest with everybody. I'll go to a dinner or go to somebody at work or their house or stuff like that. I'm sorry, it's not my food. I can't eat that. I'm going to bring my own food or what it's going to take for me to be in my program. Sometimes people's feelings may get hurt because of our honesty, but mine aren't. I'm going to stay strong because I have to be that way. What about when we're asked to do service or duties that make us have fear, like I was when Amy called me to do this talk, right? Thanks, Amy. Appreciate that. But what happens when that happens? Do we use the excuse, oh, I don't have time? How about this one? Let me ask my sponsor, or I'll pray about it. Well, if we're being honest, do you really do that? Because you both know, I know, what my sponsor in HP would tell me. Just get in there and do the damn service, right? Just do the service because that's what you need to do. Right. And I will share that it at least took me a day to get back to Amy that said, yes, I would do the talk once I got over my fear. But I did. I'm here. The role of honesty helps me in building trust with myself, in my relationships, with my friends, my family, and I for sure want an honest relationship with those that are in my life. How about telling others I'm fine? It's all good, right? I think about when I was in relapse. Now, I was in relapse from September 22, started in September 22, and again to when I came out of it. But I remember a fellow, she called me, very important person in my life, and she called me and said, where you been? What's going on? I said, I'm fine. She goes, bullshit, I don't believe you. You're not coming to meetings. You're not doing service anymore. And when you are at the meeting, your camera's not on. So what's going on? Where are you? What happened? You're not doing service. You're not reaching out. You're not calling me as much as you used to. What's really going on? This was on this day on November 16th that I broke down to her, bawling my head off, crying, being completely honest that I had lost my abstinence over 3 months ago. She said, good. Well, what's the next meeting you're going to? Get into a room. And I think about that period all the time and how she saved my life and what that was and what that meant. For her to have the courage to be honest with me that I don't see you. What's going on? Where are you? And I think about it today. That dishonesty for me came as a result of fear, not practicing the principles in all my affairs, and not working an honest program. I remember the feeling that I had to tell my sponsees at the time that I had lost my abstinence and let them go till I was clean again. I wasn't being honest with them when I had lost my abstinence because I pretended to be a sponsor when I wasn't abstinent. How unfair was that to them? It wasn't. It was not fair at all. I remember having to share at a meeting and some of my folks, you know, what that was going to look like, and I was so afraid and what others were going to think and having to be honest. I went to the meeting the exact same night on November 16th. I went to a meeting that night and I shared that I had lost my abstinence after 4.5 years. The meeting said, we're glad you're here. You're loved and you're welcome. Keep coming back. But then as a result of my relapse, it has given me the ability to share this story and what abstinence meant and how strong it is and how much I want to keep it. I know what it felt like being abstinent, and I don't want to lose that feeling again. Because when I wasn't abstinent, and I will share, in the short 3 months that I was out, I gained almost all of my weight back in that short 3 months. And it's not as easy the second time to get rid of it because I'm still working on that, right? But I did. I just went nuts. So thinking of your abstinence, what's that feel like? Remember that feeling. Don't ever let that go. It gives us, when we can share that feeling and people hear that, it gives us hope and gives them hope. Sometimes honesty is painful. However, it keeps me humble and it keeps me true. I must be honest in all of those around me, and I have to especially be honest to the most important person, myself. I have to be honest to myself. No more, I'm fine. If a person asks me, I'm going to be honest. If you don't want to know, don't ask. But if they ask, now it's, I can't say I'm fine anymore. I'm abstinent today. I'm working my program. I'm using the tools. I'm grateful. Or if I'm having a bad day, I tell them that as well. But I'm not fine anymore. I'm not just, I'm fine. Everything's okay. Tell me what it is. In AA 12 and 12, on page 107, it says, he finds himself in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love, which he had thought himself quite incapable. Once I became honest, I had great hope, which takes me to my next principle, principle 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The principle is hope. Hope is the beacon of light in our darkest moments. It reminds us that no matter how dire our circumstances may seem, there is always a possibility of a brighter tomorrow. It's the whisper that urges us to persevere, to continue striving for healing and growth. It's our moment of despair. It's this unwavering hope that keeps us tethered to the possibility of recovery. The unwavering hope that keeps us tethered to this possibility of recovery. There are 34 entries in the big book and 8 in the 12 and 12, hope. A feeling of expectation, desire for certain things to happen, an aspiration, a desire, a wish, an expectation, ambition, aim, plan, dream, daydream, longing, yearning, my favorite, hankering, optimism, hopefulness, expectancy, confidence, faith, trust, belief, and conviction. I do have a desire, a plan, a wish, the confidence, and yes, a hankering. This is all worth it, because it really, really is. Hope. I need to have hope that HP will restore me to sanity and keep me abstinent. A daily reprieve from my addiction is based on my spiritual condition. I'm going to choose my power. I'm going to choose my higher power. This allows me to have hope so that it can restore me to sanity. HP is everything, or else he is nothing. We have to make a choice. HP is everything, or he's nothing. We have to make a choice. When I look beyond my abstinence, do I have hope that HP will restore me to sanity in all of my affairs? And in page 12 of the OA 12 and 12, it says, little by little, we saw how much pain our way of living was causing us. Gradually, we came to believe we needed to change. In all our life, as well as with food, we were irrational, unbalanced, and insane. If our willpower and determination couldn't change our unsuccessful way of living, what could? Clearly, if we were to be restored to sanity, we had to find a power greater than ourselves. Do I have hope that HP will guide me in dealing with that difficult coworker? Will he help me in deal with issues with my children, with my ex-wife? Will he give me peace when I'm in traffic? And am I able to give my fear and anxiety HP? Well, I tell you, I did for this talk. I'm here. You know, it was one talk. Can I do it? Yep, I can do it. Here we are. The OA 12 and 12, page 104 says, hope will now need to underline all our actions. Even in our loneliest hours, we can remind ourselves of the great truth. We are not alone. Even in our weakest moments, we will find the strength we need if we believe it is available and if we ask for it. We have to ask. We need to ask for hope from our HP, and we also ask to have hope from others and ask for others in the program. There are so many people in this room. I bet any single person would take and pick up a call if we called. Make those calls. In the big book forward for me in the second edition, page XXI, yet is our great hope that all those who have yet found no answer may be given one, may begin to find one in the pages of this book, and will presently join us on the high road to a new freedom. I've had that freedom. I love that freedom. I want to continue it. The program gives us that freedom if we work it. The big book says, page 71, how it works. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. And like I said, I did take back my self-will in September 22, and I had lost my relationship with HP. Well, I didn't really lose it. I just wasn't working on it. How important is it to maintain that relationship with our HP? It's the most important thing we can do. Do I reach out to HP or my fellows? It says, even in our weakest moments, we find strength. But I have to see it and I have to use it. I have to pray, I have to listen, and I have to make calls to others. Like I said, we're all one big happy family of compulsive overeaters, and I would surely take a call. I know that phone gets heavy, but every one of us probably has got it in our pocket, in our purse, in our somewhere. Pick it up and use it when you need it. All right? No matter what, HP's always there. You don't need a phone for that. So I had hoped that God could restore me to sanity. I had been there before. I'm going to be there again, and I know that feeling. But practicing in all my affairs, what does that look like? By remaining sane. Insanity is continuing to eat and put food into my body that I know causes harm and pain. It's not doing the work. So the opposite of sanity, knowing the food that I put in my body is from my plan, is weighed and measured, and is nutritional. It's doing the work. Recognize the unmanageability in my life. It's a life issue. And we do know that life gets unmanageable at times. How do I deal with it? Do I give up, or do I look for direction from my higher power? Knowing that He can restore this, I know it works better when I do. Do I use the tools? I'm kind of hung up on tools. We had a men's retreat here about 3 weeks ago in this actual building, and that's all we did for the whole week, and we talked about the tools. But what are the tools we think about? Meeting, telephone, plan of eating, sponsorship, writing, literature, action plan, anonymity, and service. How often do we use those tools every single day? They're so important. I must believe I will be successful. I have hope in myself, and I have hope for you. The most important person on this journey is you. Follow through each day, and a belief will become a reality. We all hope to get past this and succeed. Cultivate hope. Recognize that recovery is possible with dedication and perseverance. Have faith in yourself, which takes me to my next principle. Principle is faith, the step, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Faith is a steadfast belief that we are not alone in our journey, that there is a higher purpose guiding us. Whatever we call it, God, the universe, our own inner wisdom. Faith is what sustains us when hope wanes and honesty feels too painful to bear. Faith is what sustains us when hope wanes and honesty is too painful to bear. It is a truth that there is a divine plan unfolding, even in the midst of the chaos and uncertainty of my compulsive overeating life. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Faith is taking the first step, even when we don't see the whole staircase." We may not see the staircase, but we got to take that first step. It is this leap of faith that propels us forward, even when the path ahead is surrounded in darkness. Faith doesn't have to be religious. Don't have to be religious to have faith. It can manifest in various ways, forms, and such as trust in the process, trust in your program, faith in your ability to change. In the big book, there are 62 entries and 24 in the big book related to faith. Firm belief in something for which there is no logical, material, or absolute proof. Belief, trust, and loyalty to God or any other set of beliefs or principles. Belief in the truth, value, or trustworthiness of an idea, principle, person, place, or thing. Reliance, allegiance, hope. The AA 12 and 12 on page 114. Our basic troubles are the same as everyone else's. But when an honest effort is made, a well-grounded AA seems to have the ability, by God's grace, to take these troubles in stride and turn them into demonstrations of faith. And in the OA 12 and 12 on page 104, the decision to trust God, to understand God, practicing the principles means that we will no longer go through life acting however we feel like acting, and sometimes I really want to feel that way. Instead, we will look for HP, for guidance and strength as we face each decision. And in the big book on how it works on page 70, it says, in this book you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. Do you have faith in yourself? You need to. You're worth it. Do you look towards HP for guidance and strength as we face difficult decisions? I know for me it's a lot easier to ask for faith and look at the decisions as they come forward when I have that faith. And as life does, we are faced daily with decisions, and they're easier to deal with when I have that. Having my food plan makes it easy for me not to have to ask questions about my food. It's just there. It gives me the energy to ask when ankle biters, or better yet, when those shin kickers come up. Because we all know that life gets lifey, right? Life gets lifey. We know that. How about the program? Do you have faith in your program and what you're doing? Is it working because you're working it? Well, it works when you work it. You see others around you with great results. I know I can have that as well, but I must have faith. So what is your relationship with your HP or God like today? How do you nurture that relationship? What does that look like? For me, every day I spend time in prayer and meditation. I've heard it said that prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening. So this is what it looks like for me. I imagine when I'm sitting in my chair or on my pillow for meditation, imagine the ocean and the beach, right? So the beach has got all of my crud on it, right? God's the waves in the ocean. He comes up and he scrolls onto the beach and he takes it all back out when the waves go back out. So here's something fun. We're going to do that for a minute. I want you all, if you would, to close your eyes and imagine all of the issues that you have, or all the things that you have, they're written in sand on the beach. And God is your wave that comes up and takes it out. There we go. Not my timer. But that was your minute. So thank you all for experiencing that and sharing that with me. If I can turn the phone off. So, how was it? Could you feel it? Did you picture it? I know that's been helping me tremendously every day when I do it. And it's more than a minute. The longer we can do it. It took forever for me to learn meditation. But that was one of the most helpful things that I did. How do you connect with your higher power? I want you to love and accept yourself as you are. God made you in His vision. The program for me relies on spirituality. That principle is faith. I believe in that's the foundation of this program, to surrender the self, the ego, to that of a higher power, to have faith. Prayer and meditation have been shown to contribute to long-term recovery. I must get beyond who I think I am and the way I've been conditioned to believe. I need to work on what I know to be true and what has worked when I followed the principles. I have to get out of my own way. I have to transcend the memory of myself and allow something greater than myself in. Something mystical must take over. I have to bring the higher power in. It says in page 164 in the Big Book, one of my favorite, see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Things happen for you, not to you. As a result of coming back to the program, I regained my abstinence on November 16th, 2022. Today is almost 17 months. I have a stronger program than ever. I got a sponsor. I'm reworking the steps and weighing and measuring. The only scale for me matters is the one that's on the counter. And if I'm worried about my weight, I got to climb up on the counter and try to step up on that scale. And that ain't happening. See, it's not the body weight that matters. It's having a clear head, working the steps, showing up to meetings with your camera on. Make it a priority to go to a face-to-face meeting. Get in the rooms. Don't hide behind the Zoom camera. We're so lucky here in the Twin Cities, we could go to an in-person meeting 7 days a week. In the Twin Cities, there is an in-person meeting 7 days a week that we could do if we wanted to. Get in the rooms. Show others your recovery. And if you're not in recovery, get around those that are. You're only going to get that when you're in the rooms. Go to the rooms. It's important. You have to practice these principles daily. Some days it's easier to practice principles than others. I have to ask myself, do I go to HP to make them others? To make them easier? Do I look at another light? My approach to the program has been this. I have to have hope faith, and a vision. For me, a vision is like a GPS. It's where I'm headed. What do I see? The G is my goal. What is my goal? What am I trying to get to? What goals do I have for my program and my recovery? The P, that's the path. What's the path I'm doing? What tools am I using to help me in that path? And an S is for the screen. What's the movie of my life look like? What can that look like? Do you like what you see? Does it need to change? You can change it if you want to. Goals will find a way into your life, and you can define your path. Always look at the screen of your life that's plain. I had to master my emotions and be honest with them. What kind of life did I want? Was I willing to put in the work? Did I do as my sponsor told me? Did I follow my food plan, honestly? I became hopeful, and I had faith in my vision. I had some formulas that I'd like to share. Talks about feeling great. I need to focus on what I want, my goals and my visions, to have hope and to have faith. Not achieving that is in the past. I have to be honest about the program and the work that I'm currently doing. I have to focus on what I have and have gratitude and appreciation. I need to focus on what I like and what I need to do to make my program a success, because that's the most important thing for me as a successful program. I have to do more of what brings me pleasure, and maybe not so much pleasure, i.e. service. All right. Rid yourself of your insecurities. I found that self-care is the most important cure to insecurity. Our insecurity may never go away, but it can be put dormant and it can be put to sleep. Surround yourself with an empowering environment. Have faith. Go to in-person meetings. Sometimes you may need to divorce from yourself or that of others. You might need to prune the garden of those that are in your life. You need to have and hold standards of how you will be treated, and teach people what you expect and how you will be treated. You may have to let go of some things or some people that are causing you to decay, but you need to be honest. I look for united mindfulness. I see, I hear, and I feel. What I see on the inside, I don't focus on what I feel on the outside, or what I see on the outside. It's what I see on the inside. I hear, what do I tell myself? Am I listening to what others are telling me, whether it's negative or positive? Am I hearing what HP and my sponsor are saying? And feel, how do we feel about ourselves? Why do we worry about what others think about us? Only thing that matters is us. I know for me that I will suffer if I don't keep away from the spiritual malady, physical allergy, emotional and mental obsession. I will again fall victim to my cycle of compulsive overeating. Having that happened in the past, I sure the heck don't want it to happen again. This program is a holistic approach to recovery. I have to heal all aspects of my life, spiritual, physical, and emotional, in order to have that healthy balance. It's like a stool, right? It's that three-legged. Keep them balanced. For me, physical health is also important to my recovery. Eating weighed and healthy, abstinent meals, sleeping well, getting regular physical exercise, interacting socially with sober and abstinent friends, resuming some of my favorite activities, embarking on new hobbies. They're all the ways that have helped me recover and keep this path, life, and enjoyment of life moving forward. For me, the emotional, I believe emotional sobriety is less about the quality of feeling, and the feeling good or bad, and more about the ability to feel those feelings. Right? For my continued abstinence to work, I must learn to deal with my emotions in a healthy way, no matter the situation and what that may become. Emotional sobriety means for me being able to put the experience first and accept it, good or bad. Instead of being completely overwhelmed with my emotions, I need to have the ability to step back, honestly realize them, and accept them as they come. These feelings have become elevated. They've allowed me to care, to nurture, to trust, to connect, to feel safe, to serve, to be thankful, to have hope, to be honest, and have faith. All this work has allowed me to see how the principles work into my life. And they work for me today as follows. I'm being more honest with myself and those around me. Principle is honesty. Knowing that I am abstinent today and I can be tomorrow. Principle of hope. Trusting my higher power. The principle of faith. Making decisions without being unduly influenced by my emotions. Principle of courage. Not being controlled by the opinions of others. Integrity. Embrace new challenges. Stay in the program. Recognize the opportunities as they present themselves. The principle of willingness. I have to acknowledge my faults, my mistakes, accept feedback, Be open, have empathy, and give credit to others. Principle of humility. I need to enjoy life as an absent person. Self-discipline. Practicing letting go of resentments and envy. Jealousy. Principle of love for others. Being certain enough of my own values and beliefs that I'm not thrown off by social pressure. For me, that principle said perseverance. Staying present in my relationship with the higher power, enduring both the hardship and the pleasure. For me, that principle was spiritual awareness. And having a genuine, healthy pleasure for helping others. Service. I have a routine that I do every day called SAVERS. Spiritual, affirmation, visualization, exercise, and reading. I read the daily reader, work the steps, and use the tools. I'm practicing the principles in all my affairs. I feel great because my mind is clear and I have focus. I have focus on what I want, what I need to do, and what's important. It gives me direction. I focus on what I like and see the appreciation. I focus on what I have. It gives me gratitude. I can't be grateful for everything, but I can be grateful in every moment. Remember, be honest in all you do. Have hope in yourself and your recovery, and always lean on your faith. As we continue on our journey of recovery, hold fast to these tools, honesty, hope, and faith. Draw strength from their wisdom and let them guide us as we navigate the twists and turns of this crazy life of ours. Together with these tools in hand, we can move forward with the courage, the resilience, and the unwavering belief that a brighter future awaits us. And I want to thank you. May our journey be blessed with hope, honesty, and faith. And with love and support, I pass.